whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Brought to you by Rock Antenna, Germany's number one rock radio station.
Guten Morgen.
Guten Morgen.
Hi. How are you?
Well, not too much. You know me. I'm great.
Well, congratulations to your new record. And
thank you.
When I, but I hope I'm wrong, but The Hives Forever, Forever The Hives sounds like the title of a very nice, glorious, famous last record. This is not your last record, is it?
Well, we're saying forever, so probably not.
This is like the glorious, you know, the last hooray. It sounds like that.
But Well, we always want every record to feel like the last will and testament, like. But that's because they're so fucking hard to do. So every time we finish a record, we want it to be the last one. But now it's starting to feel like we're going to make another one.
As you said, every record is a hard one. But was this one difficult in any reason to do, to write?
If you're trying to make something as good as you possibly can, it's always hard, I think. Otherwise, you're not trying hard enough. So yeah, we make it harder on ourselves. I think parts of this were easier than they have been. It's a bit more relaxed. And I think also because we didn't really have time to worry much because we were making it so quickly after the last record. And also we were making it during a world tour, kind of. So we'd just be on tour, come home, record a little bit, go on tour, come home, record a little bit. So it was pretty, we didn't have time to worry that much, which maybe was good.
But you guys are on a roll. I mean, this is the shortest amount of time in between two Hives records.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. We wanted to have momentum. We never had that. Like, what would that? That sounds cool. Like, I mean, we thought it was cool. You know, a lot of bands we liked. It was different back in the day. Where the Ramones would like finish four records before putting out the first one, and then they could just like tour and put out records all the time. And I think like Slipknot did too, and Oasis, like where you have like several records before you put up the first one. And then, so we decided, we kind of made these records in tandem. Like there's bits of this record that were finished before the next record, before Death for Randy Fitzsimmonson. So yeah, that was kind of our attempt at that, I guess, to see what would happen if we put out two records quickly.
It's kind of, that's funny because the vibe is kind of similar on both of those records, I think. But
it's the same people.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the same music, you know. You never know.
It's the same people, but I mean, originally they were planned to be more different. Like, definitely, Randy Fitzsimmons was going to be like the, you know, coming back more childish and punk than ever. Like, that was the idea.
Yeah.
Just be super obnoxious and not. Because the last thing we wanted to come back with was like a more mature Hives. And I think this record was supposed to be kind of the songs that were more mature, like more structured and more, more kind of, it was supposed to be like an arena blockbuster record. But in the end, it became a punk record anyway.
What was the hardest song to write on this record?
Definitely Bad Call. We played that live like maybe 10, 15 years ago. Yeah. But we never... So for two records, we've been trying to finish it, but have failed. It was like a great verse and a build-up to a chorus, but we never had a chorus. Like the version we used to play live didn't even have a chorus. It just went back to the verse.
Yeah.
And that was just too boring. But now... We finally managed to, we just decided that whatever it's going to be, it's going to be on this record. So we don't have to worry about it anymore. But that's definitely been, it's probably the hardest Hive song to finish in history.
That's crazy. How many songs have you written for this record? How many songs did you have time to write for this record? Is everything we have on there recorded?
Maybe there's one or two that didn't make it on the record.
Yeah.
But pretty much all the stuff the Hives finish ends up on a record. Like we don't have a big, it's not like Prince where you have a big vault of unreleased records or anything like that. Because we all have to like it pretty much. And if we all have to like it, it's harder to I mean, Prince just had to like it himself.
Well, the Hives, after all those years, I presume is a big family. And I think... Is there lots of discussion? Is there lots of quarrel? Is there an order? Is there a hierarchy in the Hives?
It's a very democratic band, more democratic than any other band we've come across, which means that everything is harder to do. Yeah. But it also means we've been together for 33 years or whatever it is. And I think that's like the cost of staying together is that it's more difficult this way, you know, being kind of a hopeless democracy. But those relationships within the band, it's like we're, you know, brothers in a way. We love each other and we're friends. Sometimes we're just colleagues. Sometimes we don't like each other. So you have to have all these different roles in order to make it work, you know.
What is the Hives forever, forever the Hives? What is it supposed to do for you? What do you hope this record can do for you?
The idea is to play, finally say yes to playing bigger shows. Like we thought the Hives show was for 2,000 to 5,000 people.
Yeah.
But now you've decided to do bigger shows. So I guess what I'm hoping is filling those bigger venues, which would also give us a lot of money, I suppose. But that's very secondary. It's just about seeing. It's just fun to be ambitious and try to do bigger things, you know.
Hang on.
Because we've been on the same kind of circuit, the same size venues for 20 years. It's like, to make it interesting, we have to try to go up. So I think the idea is to do bigger shows and smaller shows.
Are you afraid of not selling out then? Because I've seen you in clubs and I've seen you in open air shows. And it doesn't matter if it's 500 people or 50,000 people, you guys always deliver.
Yeah.
So what's
No, I don't. I'm not. I mean, if we don't sell it out, like big deal, like it still did the show, you know. Yeah. I mean, you can't worry about that stuff. But I mean, obviously it's nicer to sell all the tickets, but I don't worry too much about it. Then at least we try.
Why didn't you try to sell bigger venues before, to play bigger venues before? You could have.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we were all, but we wanted to do it that way. We wanted to play, we loved playing those like 2,000 to 5,000 capacity venues so much that that's what we thought we wanted to do.
Yeah.
I think it was also like, we kind of modeled it on the Ramones where it's like, we just do our own shows. We don't really support anyone else. We kind of just... Which is what we thought the Ramones did, which probably wasn't. But we had this idea that we would do it, like the touring would only be Hives shows and it would only be like a certain type of place. Like, because those places are so cool, like those classic like theaters or whatever. So that's what we thought was fun. I think that's why we did it that way.
Okay. So never mind the money.
That's and I think Nicholas especially, like he never liked the crowd being far away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the bigger venues, the crowd's always kind of far away, and festivals, the crowd's always, and it's kind of a bummer. I agree with that. So that's one of the reasons too. You want to be able to like go into the crowd and stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the gig in October in Munich because this venue is tricky. For us being down there, you guys are far away like a mother. And I'm kind of curious what you're going to do in order to, you know, break this distance down.
I don't think I've, what's the venue called?
Zenit, like Zenit.
Okay. I don't think I've ever been.
No.
Interesting. Noted. I'm going to try to do my best with that. Figure something out.
Now you guys have a couple of songs on there. Can you explain the title OCDOD to me, please?
Yeah. Obsessive compulsive disorder overdose.
Overdose. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the one you did with Mike D?
Well, we did a bunch of stuff with Mike D. That's one of them. You can hear his voice on it. He's singing on it.
Yeah. It sounds more like an early Beastie Boys hardcore version of whatever they did.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we love that stuff. Like the Beastie Boys, even though they didn't do much of it, they're like a top three hardcore band for me.
Yeah,
they're better than most hardcore bands that spent their lives doing it. It's like Bad Brains 1 and 2 and then Beastie Boys 3.
I could never relate to the Bad Brains. I always was a Chromex guy. But anyway.
Yeah, Well, you're wrong, but that's fine.
How was he recording with Mike D? How was he involved in all those sessions? What did he do?
The first thing he did was we were sending him songs, sending him demos.
Yeah.
And he kind of made covers of it on like his Beastie Boys gear that's in his garage. Like all the old Beastie Boys, like drum machines and synths and stuff. And he would send back a version and we would use kind of parts of that in our songs. And then he came over for like a couple of days to work with us in the studio, and he kind of had notes on what he wanted to do, and we kind of tried what he wanted to try. And then the last thing was like after a US tour, I went to his house in Malibu to this garage with all the Beastie Boys gear and tried to kind of finish some things, or like work on some stuff, which was, we were mostly just kind of had dinner with his family and saunaed. But yeah, managed to do some stuff there too.
You know, it seems like the Hives is such a close unit. I cannot even imagine that some guy from the outside, even if it's Mike D, gets a say in what you guys would sound like.
No, it's pretty true. I mean, we only use it if we think it's better than our idea. Like he definitely had some ideas that we didn't want to use. We're all there to make the best Hives album we can make, regardless of, you know, egos or whatever. And he knows that. Like he's, you know, trying to help as best as he can. But yeah, it's not, we would never get someone in that would decide over us, I don't think. But it's great to work with people we respect and who have, you know, great ideas. And he definitely made some things better. And that's, you know, we're eternally grateful for anyone who can make a Hives thing better. Because it's difficult. And if someone's like, what about trying this? And then you're like, oh, that sounds way better. Woo! You know, that's like the best feeling in the world. Where you're like struggling with something and Mike D comes in and like just flip these two parts, whatever it is, his suggestion would be, and making it better. It's like that's my favorite feeling in the world. But but yeah, we wouldn't like, if we didn't like it, we wouldn't use it.
Yeah. And there's another name in all those press release texts that Josh Omi did some stuff for you and you did something with him. How was he involved?
Yeah, well, that's more of like an advisory thing. Like I'd call him and play him stuff when I wasn't sure about things. And
how can you?
Yeah, we play each other. Like,
sure about
I went to the house. He played me some new Queen stuff. We talked about that. I played him some new Hive stuff. We talked about that. Yeah, that kind of thing.
It's crazy. How long did it take you to finish all the record?
I don't know. Since we were like going on tour, so we were coming back and going kind of back and forth. But I guess it was like, it takes a very long time to write the music and finish the music. But yeah, recording, maybe a month,
God,
2 months, something like that. Yeah, well, there's, you know, years of preparation, which some bands do in the studio. So it's kind of like, it makes it sound like we're faster than we are. But took a long time to get the songs in order, but recording them was pretty fast.
Are you happy? Or more or less, afraid is a wrong word. But are you happy that this whole record tour cycle now kind of starts again with you guys, and you're gonna be on, you know, constantly busy?
A bit of both. I'm really excited, but I'm also pretty tired from making the record and doing all the press tours. You know, you're gonna have to have some kind of a holiday before we go on a world tour, but I haven't really figured out when and where. I'm going to stay in Japan for a bit when we play Japan this summer.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's going to feel like a holiday or just surreal.
It's going to be hot though. Very hot.
Yeah, it's going to be very hot, which I don't like. So I don't know. Maybe I'll... Yeah, I'm going to have to figure out some rest time at some point before starting the tour and the album release and stuff. But no, it feels great. And it's a record, you know, we wanted to make for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I've looked forward to releasing. So it's really, I'm just, you know, whatever, grateful that we've finished it, that it exists and that, you know, because it was like, when we were making the Death of Randy Fitzsimmons, we kind of made a 5-year plan.
Yeah.
And that 5-year plan kind of, we're doing it now. And I think after next summer, we've kind of done the 5-year plan and then we'll see where we are.
Okay.
Because that's what we have agreed to do as a band. Like after that, we're not sure what they're doing, but it feels good to be, at kind of the final stages of the five-year plan.
Well, after a five-year plan, there's always going to be a next five-year plan. You know that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, no worry. No hurry there, though. We'll get to that. Cross that bridge when we get to it.
Why? And I really haven't read it up or looked it up, but why was it that you guys had so many, not breaks in, breaks in making music and releasing new music over your whole career?
I don't think there were really breaks. We just toured so fucking much. There was once, though, like before the Death of Randy Fitzsimmons, there was like 11 years, which is insane.
Yeah.
That's the only real break. And I can't really explain it. We couldn't finish it. We didn't make music together. It was really hard. We, there was a lot of life getting in the way. There was the pandemic.
Yeah.
We knew we didn't want to put out records during the pandemic because they just kind of get lost. And we know bands that did, and nobody remembers those records anymore. And after the pandemic kind of was done, then we kind of got to work. But it did take an insanely long amount of time, and none of us are happy about it.
Yeah, I can understand that. So,
I kind of wish these two records came out 5 years earlier than they did.
Yeah.
They didn't.
yeah. It's, you have your Chinese democracy now. It's all good. So
It's finally coming out.
So I don't know. There's, I wish I could say like, wait, do you guys gonna be here forever? Obviously, you're gonna be here forever.
Well, but even if we don't play shows, I think I hear and see the Hives everywhere. I think our influence will be here forever, regardless of us doing shit or not.
How many young bands came up to you and said, we are a band because of you?
Many.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a number, but there's definitely been a lot of people who came up to or like explain how much we meant to them starting a band and stuff, which is really cool. It's kind of a lineage, you know. There were bands who were the reason we started, and there were bands who were the reason those bands started. So it's kind of like a lineage of rock music that, is my favorite music.
Except for the Bad Brains, what was the reason you started a band?
It was like early punk. I think the first thing was AC/DC, but we were like 6 years old and there was no one starting a band. But that's the first recording of me and Nicholas playing together. He plays drums and I sing. And there's a friend down the street who played electric guitar. It doesn't sound like AC/DC at all. It sounds like a noise rock band from Japan or something. But it starts out with me screaming exactly the way I scream at the top of a lot of Hive songs these days. And then after that, I think it was like around 11 or 12, there was like punk rock stuff that we got into that we felt like we could do. It was Swedish punk rock mainly. A band called KSMB and a band called Strebers, who were really important to us. And then America, that led into like American punk, like Misfits and Ramones, maybe Dead Kennedys was a big thing. And then it also led to, that led us to, we couldn't afford to buy that many records. So we went through our parents' record collections and found like 50s rock and roll. Like it was a lot of like, so it was like a mix between like Dead Kennedys and Bad Brains and Misfits and also like Little Richard and I don't know, like Chuck Berry or some rockabilly or whatever we could find that we liked there.
This is great.
Maybe some Rolling Stones. Yeah, some Yardbirds and Rolling Stones from Chris's dad's parent record collection.
Do you have to get new suits for every new tour?
We should. But we don't. They're usually pretty smelly and like taped up and fixed many times and stuff. Take a beating in them.
The ones from the last two were really great. They just look fantastic.
Thank you. Seeing the glow in the dark.
It was fantastic. Well, I have no more further questions, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Bye.
whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Subscribe to our channel for more rocking podcasts.